Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and we are almost there. The 2015 season is upon us. It all gets started on Thursday night with the Pittsburgh Steelers at the New England Patriots. Joining me to look ahead to week one and the entire season, my usual partner from Sky Sports coverage of the NFL, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, the long off season is over. I know you say there is no off season, but there was one officially, and it's over.
Yes, it is. It's game week, baby. Let's go. I'm telling you what, it is. If you can't get excited now, man, you better check your, you better go to the doctor and find out what the heck's going on with your heart.
So before we get to week one, we're going to look at some of the notable cuts that took place around the NFL last week, that last week of roster cutdowns. We are going to sprinkle some stardust. Not that you need it. You've got me and Jeff. But we are going to sprinkle a little bit of NFL stardust into today's podcast. So you will hear from Miami Dolphins defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh, Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback Blake Bortles, New York Jets wide receiver Brandon Marshall, Detroit Lions quarterback Matthew Stafford, and our old friend 49ers head coach Jim Tom Sula. So, Jeff, before we get to all of that, and we will be answering questions in the mailbag as well and making our picks for week one, this feels like it's a podcast that might go for 3 hours.
You know what? There's no reason why we can't. I'm telling you what, we won a big one yesterday, 42-12, and against our arch rival, the Toronto Argonauts, and Coach gave us 2 extra hours off this morning, so I got 2 hours. Let's go.
So you've got an extra 2 hours, yeah? But that will go into my lunchtime, and if I don't eat pretty close to 12 o'clock, I get grouchy.
Yeah, I've seen you get miserable when you don't have any food.
So there you go. So if I don't make my picks, if I'm making picks by the time I'm grouchy, then I'll be saying that nobody's going to win. Let's have a look at some of the cutdowns then, Jeff. And then I've got a question from the mailbag I want to ask you in a second. But some of the notable cuts, I mean, Buffalo cut Matt Cassel. That saves them more than $4 million in his base salary, the quarterback of the Buffalo Bills. There's a few quarterbacks who might be looking now and saying, well, I've had my chance in the NFL. The Dolphins cut Josh Freeman. I noticed that Oakland cut Christian Ponder. He was a first-round draft pick at quarterback. I also noticed, Jeff, with interest, Reggie Wayne asked to be released by the Patriots, but also Belichick cut Jonas Gray, didn't he? The guy who burst onto the scene with 200 rushing yards last year in a game against Indianapolis. 201 yards, 4 touchdowns, was barely seen after that. He overslept and missed a practice, and there he is. He's no longer on the Patriots roster. I mean, what cutdowns stood out to you?
Well, I think there's a trend, Neil, frankly, when you see those veteran quarterbacks getting cut, and you're talking about in some cases guys that were drafted very high, that teams are not going to hold on to third quarterbacks that are older guys. They're just not going to do it. Obviously there's the salary cap ramifications of, you know, Matt Cassel was a $4 million guy, and so that clears a lot of money off so that you can go out and try and re-sign a Donovan Darius and some of the things that they've got to get done. But I think if you're an older quarterback and you're not a guy that they can develop, then you're going to be on the street and you're going to be a phone call away. That's the way they look at it. So if they have an injury in the season, now there are some guys that are out there that they can get off the couch and get them in. And, you know, Matt Cassel's not going to take, you know, a month to get ready to play. So I think that's a growing trend in the NFL. You know, you see more and more teams are if they're going to carry a third, it's going to be a young guy, not an older guy.
As we look ahead to week one, one of the 6 live games we have on Sky Sports is the Bears and the Packers. And we've talked about the Packers receivers in the past, Jeff, with Jordy Nelson going out for the season. I saw the New York Giants cut James Jones, and he's headed back to Green Bay. James Jones didn't get it done in Oakland. He's just been cut by the Giants. So why should we believe there's anything left in the tank to get it done in Green Bay, or should we not be thinking that?
Well, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that plays itself out because of the fact that, you know, you're talking about a guy that's failed twice now in a row. And there's a steep drop when you get to skill position players. You know, there can be that, you know, whether it's them taking care of themselves physically or it's just the age factor catches them and the legs, are, as they always say, are the first things to go. So we'll see when he gets back to Green Bay. But, you know, the Packers, they've got to look around. They've got to find guys that you know, can come in and help a really depleted core, because I don't know if people really appreciate the loss of a Jordy Nelson. You know, you're talking about a 90 catch guy that is, you know, just almost on, you know, on the same wavelength in everything he does with his quarterback. Those guys almost telepathic in their communication to one another, that nonverbal communication on the field. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, and I think it's going to be interesting to see who steps up. You know, if you're the Packers, you're holding your breath now because you're one injury away from a really bad situation.
Here's an update on the British players. So Jack Crawford made the 53-man roster of the Dallas Cowboys. Menelik Watson, as we mentioned last week, out for the season with the Oakland Raiders with a ruptured Achilles. Lawrence Okoye was released by the San Francisco 49ers, but did sign to the practice squad of the Arizona Cardinals. Jay Ajayi, the running back with the Miami Dolphins, is going to start the season on short-term IR. Broke a rib in the final preseason game. He's going to miss the game at Wembley Stadium. And then Efe Abada, who we know played just 5 games for the London Warriors in the British League, he was among the final cuts for the Dallas Cowboys. But there is still a chance that FA makes the practice squad in Dallas, because they haven't set that practice squad fully yet. So there's still hope there. Jeff, here's a question for you from the mailbag. It comes from Johnny Rogers, who says, for those players who are cut, what's next? How do they stick around football if that's all they know? I mean, this is a difficult time for some guys. They don't make it back, do they?
Yeah, it is tough for some guys. And, you know, let's talk about a guy like Efe Abada, for example.
Yep.
Here is a great physical specimen who has very, very little football training, very little football background. He's in a much better position than a 5 or 6 year veteran who now is, you know, high cap number, has, you know, the years of playing behind him. I think FA's not played his last football. I really firmly believe that. And so for a guy like him, he's obviously going to get worked out, you know, both in Dallas and around the league, you know, because of his physical characteristics and you know, just so much raw talent. And then some of those guys will come up here and play up here in the Canadian League as a way to prolong their careers, or as a ticket to get back in the league. You can sign a 1-year contract here in the Canadian Football League, and then at the end of that year, you can renegotiate with all 32 NFL teams. We just signed Kealoha Polaris, a draft pick from the Carolina Panthers, a guy that played 3 years in Carolina, has a 102-yard touchdown return against the Lions on his resume. And, you know, he was looking for a club. It's an opportunity for him to get back on the field, prove he can play, and then he wants to take another crack at the National Football League. So, you know, there's avenues, there's ways out there, and certainly, you know, I think for a young guy like Efe, he's certainly not played his last football.
And Jeff, for some of these guys that are on the bottom third of rosters, this could be a season-long thing, couldn't it? Because I remember British kicker Reece Lloyd a couple of years ago telling me, he was with the Baltimore Ravens at the time, and Reese was their kickoff specialist. I mean, you don't have as many of those in the NFL nowadays, but Reese was their kickoff specialist, and a very good one at that. But whenever they needed an extra linebacker or a defensive back went down and they needed to sign somebody, Reese was the one that was expendable. And Reese was told to stay around Baltimore. He stayed around Baltimore all year, but he was on and off that roster I don't know how many times. And that's the reality of life in the NFL. If you're one of those, if you're player number 51 or 52 or 53 on a 53-man roster.
That's very true, Neil. And they have to get used to life that way. And you're on a practice squad, it's even more volatile, because while you can go be signed off the practice squad by another club, so for example, let's say a player is on a P squad in Dallas, and there's an injury in Pittsburgh, and it's at your position. The in every room, this is really interesting for the fans to get. In every room or in every facility in the National Football League, there's a personnel room where it has all of the players who are on any roster in the NFL, whether they're injured, retired list, active, 53-man reserve, the practice squad, whatever. Every name of every guy is on that board. And so, for example, if you've got an injury at defensive line and there's a guy in Dallas that is on the practice squad that you've seen or you like, or maybe you just want to research, they'll go immediately to the film bank and they'll pull out all of that kid's film from you know, previous seasons or training camp and make an evaluation, and you may want to sign that guy to your active. Mm. Now, you then have to notify the Cowboys that you want to sign him. They have the ability to activate him. They can't hold on to him on the practice squad if he chooses to leave, unless they activate him and he gets a game check or gets put on a 53-man roster. If the Cowboys don't want to hold on to him or can't hold on to him for whatever reason, he then becomes product or he becomes property of the other team, say in this case the Steelers. The Cowboys get no compensation for that, but the player then has to be added to the active. He has to be put on the roster in Pittsburgh. You can't go from practice squad to practice squad.
No, absolutely. And certainly evidence that transactions don't end once the season begins. So we're going to begin our preview to the 2015 season. We're going to look at some breakout players. We will predict our winners and losers for week one. But we thought we'd start by hearing from one of the big fish who was signed during the free agency period. And Ndamukong Suh of the Miami Dolphins. He signed a contract for 6 years, $114 million, and I got to speak to the highest paid defensive player in NFL history.
So how does it feel to be here with the Miami Dolphins now? What was that whole experience like of going through free agency?
It was a great experience, something that I definitely took a lot of pride in and effort and energy, and very happy with the great decision that I made. This team is very, very progressive front office and great coaching staff, and I'm enjoying every bit of it, especially now here in OTAs, and looking forward to coming back over and making some good heyday and all this hard work put out.
When you sign a big contract like that, there's lots of attention, there's lots of media attention to it, people look at the numbers. Mm-hmm. Does that put added pressure on you, or have you always put that kind of pressure on yourself anyway?
Pressure's always been there, ever since I've come out of high school, being a top high school recruit, then going into college and understanding that you got to go out there and produce, and same thing leaving college and going to the pros. You're going to have heavy weight on your shoulders, and at the end of the day, God only put you there for a reason. You're a person that he sees that you can withstand that and build upon that. So that's my goal.
I watched you on the practice field in Detroit last year, and you just seem to drive everyone around you. Like, make a competition of it. You and Nick Fairley or whoever's next to you, you try and make a competition. Is that just in your nature to work that hard?
I think it's just one of the ways that I grew up, and understanding from the Bo Pelina era that I was with, and obviously going into Detroit with that group, and just here now with Coach Williams and his staff and Charlie, that's just the way we're built. Defensive linemen, it's monotonous, it gets tiring, it's tough, but to be able to break through that monotonous is you make competitions out of every single play, every single week, every single series that you go out there and practice in. Each period, so to make sure you get the best of your abilities, just make it a competition. Somebody who always wants to win.
Do you sense this is a team that's close to sort of taking that step to be one of the elite teams and a real contender?
I definitely think so. I think there's a team that has a lot of capabilities. Obviously, have a great quarterback, great offensive line that I've seen personally, obviously practiced against, and we have an opportunity to just go out there and produce. And the biggest thing that we're going to have to do is come together here in these coming weeks and in training camp and all these different particular pieces for us to become that team that we want to become. But at the end of the day, on paper you may look great, but you got to be able to get it done on the field.
So, Jeff, we hear that Ndamukong Suh, the money doesn't really mean that much to him. He's going to put the pressure on himself to perform anyway, and he likes to make everything a competition, whether it's on the practice field, in games. This is one very, very driven defensive player, even though he's got the money in the bank.
Well, I think this was, you know, indicative. When you came, I think it was when he was in Detroit, you had spent some time with him previous and watched him on the practice field, and how every single takeoff, what's called takeoff drill, where they come out of their stance and try and, you know, get 5 yards up the field as fast as they can. He wanted to win every single one of them and was challenging Nick Fairley to stay up with him. That's the kind of guy you want to pay money to. Now, I know Sue's had, you know, some issues with the way he plays. People say he's a dirty player, all that kind of stuff. You want to pay the highest paid guys need to be your best workers. That's really, really important. And I think that's a great sign by the Dolphins. And I'm anxious to see, you know, as you say, the big fish now, how the big fish does down in that pool in Miami.
Yeah, Sue and the Dolphins, they head to Wembley Stadium to take on the New York Jets on October the 4th. So before we get to our breakout players for the 2015 season, let's hear from somebody on that Jets roster And it's a new boy with the team, although he's far from new to the NFL. It's veteran wide receiver Brandon Marshall.
Teaming with Eric Decker, what's that going to be like? He's a big receiver. You're a big wide receiver as well.
It's going to be fun. You know, it's when you look at today's NFL, guys are moving towards the philosophy of having a really good number one and two punch because it opened up a lot. You know, some people say, well, when they're doubling Brandon, they can throw it to Decker. They're doubling Decker, they can throw it to Brandon.
You had that in Chicago, didn't you?
Yeah, we had that in Chicago. But what people fail to realize or they overlook is that it opened up the lanes for the running backs.
Yeah.
You know, so if they want to roll coverage or double us, you know, it makes the lanes bigger for guys running the ball.
How'd you feel about playing a game in London?
Oh, I'm excited. I love London. London is my wife and I, is our number two city in the world. You know, we had a great time when we went to visit 2 years ago. We hung out, walked around, and, you know, we just enjoy it so much. You know, number one city is New York.
I was going to ask, what were number one?
Yeah, number one is New York. Number one is New York, but London is not far behind.
So this will be a special game then, because it's the Jets against the Dolphins.
Yes. Yeah, actually it is. So this is going to be big, but, you know, hopefully we see them again. But I want to play in Miami.
Okay.
I want to play in Miami, see all the old fans that, you know, wanted me gone.
Want to stick it to them?
I want to stick it to them a little bit.
There's a lot of Dolphins fans in the UK, so you can stick it to them first.
Yeah. But the UK fans out there, they love all sports. You know, you guys love all sports and all the teams.
Tell us about your style of play, because I read Brandon Flowers said that you're like a defensive lineman playing wide receiver. What's your mindset when you've got the ball in your hands?
You guys got to find a new quote. That he said that like 7 years
Did
ago.
He?
And I promise every person I sit down with,
they
bring up
I
that same
to be
quote.
Different.
Yeah, no. That, so that might be the thing. Everybody's like, let me find something different. And they go and
do
due diligence and find something from 5, 6, 7 years ago. And that's the thing that everybody talks about. But, you know, my game's changed a little bit. You know, before it was all physical and now it's both. You know, understanding when to use my body, when not. I've been blessed with amazing size. So definitely try to use that for my advantage. But now I'm starting to see the game a lot different, you know, and it makes it easier and helps me play faster.
So, Jeff, Brandon mentioned it there about the partnership he's going to have with Eric Decker. There's a couple of big receivers like he had in Chicago. How do you see them faring in New York? Because obviously the quarterback situation has been in a state of flux.
Well, you know, the issue with Geno in training camp, getting his jaw broken, that certainly set him back. You know, Fitzpatrick is not a guy that Neil has built a history of being a down-the-field thrower. He's more of a game manager, intermediate check-down guy. So he's got two huge targets now in Decker and Marshall. And, you know, although neither of them is what you would consider an over-the-top speed guy, just a pure vertical threat, they are great in those intermediate areas. They're big targets. They can dominate, particularly Brandon Marshall, can dominate the smaller defensive backs. So obviously, you know, it's a plus for the Jets. It's a plus for that team that's trying so desperately to get going on offense, because they're going to be good on defense. It's just going to come down to whether Fitzpatrick can consistently deliver the football to those two targets.
All right, Jeff, let's have a look at some breakout players then, because every year there are players that go take their game from one level to another, or even players that sometimes we haven't even heard of who come out and burst onto the scene and become NFL stars. There's no formal structure to this. I didn't ask you for 5 or 10. I don't know how you want to do this. Do you want to just go through a few names? We'll talk about some guys. I'll drop in some names that I'm looking out for this year. I mean, who are the guys that you think will make that big step up in 2015?
I think the young receiver in Miami has a chance to be a really, really good player. You know, I'm talking about Parker, and I think that, you know, when you look at him, he has all of the tools. He has all, you know, and it's interesting, Neil. It used to say that receiver was a hard position to play well early in an NFL career, and now we're seeing breakout performances at receiver every year. I mean, last year's class of receivers was just, you know, one of the best maybe in NFL history. And, you know, I think that this guy has a chance to be that same, you know, kind of guy. Devontae Parker, you know, he's big, 6'3", 218 pounds. He played in a college offense that's very NFL-friendly. I just really think he's got a quarterback who can throw the football to him. He's got good players around him. Everything tells me that Devontae Parker is, you know, prime for one of those kinds of years.
See, Jeff, when you said the young receiver in Miami, I was like, yes, we're on the same page, because on my list in front of me, I've got Ryan Tannehill / Jarvis Landry. I mean, I think Tannehill is going to take a big step forward. He was a 4,000-yard passer last year. I think he raises his game even further in 2015. And I do like the look of Devontae Parker. Miami do like to get the ball into the hands of their receivers quickly and let them run after the catch. And I think Jarvis Landry, who led this team a year ago, could raise his game even further in 2015. So we're kind of on the same page, but different receivers there in Miami.
Yeah, you know what, and I think that's really important. You know, that's a real important, you know, point, Neil, is that now if Parker can be what the Dolphins and all of us who evaluated him going into the draft think he can be, it's only going to make Landry better, because it's going to take, you know, all of that double coverage now. Who do you roll the safety to? All of those questions become, you know, in play. You know, Landry's a different guy, 5'11", 202 pounds, and, you know, so the Dolphins are really, I think, in good shape right there. They've got a second-year guy in Landry who's, you know, like you say, has a dynamic player, and then you got Parker, a big young kid that I think is going to really certainly help in the red zone. He's going to help, you know, those big receivers are really quarterback friendly because their catching range is so big. You don't have to put the ball right on them. And you got a quarterback now who I think really is ready to ascend and take that next step. So if you're a Dolphins fan, I think you got to feel pretty good about your football team.
Here's a few more names on my list, Jeff. Three receivers. Allen Robinson in Jacksonville. I think he was looking like a number one last year before he got hurt in the game at Wembley Stadium. Amari Cooper, I'm very excited to see with the Oakland Raiders. And I do think Davante Adams will have to take a step forward for the Green Bay Packers. Sticking with young players, I also like the look of Teddy Bridgewater. He's very, very strong in the preseason. Very good finish to the 2014 campaign. And of course, you know, we can say whatever we like about what we think about him off the field. But Adrian Peterson is one of the very best to ever play the game. And he's going to make a difference to Teddy Bridgewater's game when he returns to the Vikings' backfield.
I agree with you. Now, again, when you talk about ascending players or guys that are ready to become, you know, amongst the best at their, you know, at their position in the league, certainly Khalil Mack with the Raiders has to get into that conversation. Agreed. Because he had a great rookie season, and I think, again, he's now ready to be recognized as one of the top five or six defensive players in the National Football League. And you know, if he was playing at another place with a better team, I think certainly, you know, more people would, you know, his name would be one of the ones that rolls off your, you know, tongue when you start talking about top defensive players in the National Football League. And you know, again, I think you talk about it, guys that are going to, you know, catch magic in a bottle again. I look for Shady McCoy to have that kind of year in Buffalo, because he's in an offense where they've said they want to put it in his hands 300 times. Well, that's a lot of touches, and that's the thing that you didn't see happen to him when he was in Philadelphia. You know, that he kind of had that down year and he didn't get the ball to him as much. But look out for this guy. I think he's one of the really good young players. Sammy Watkins, the young wide receiver in Buffalo. I think he's a really, really good player. And, you know, the fans are going to get it's awesome, because the fans in the UK are going to get an opportunity to see these guys up close and personal for a week. And, you know, the Buffalo is, I think, a team that's going to surprise some people.
Jeff, I had quite a few offensive players on my list, and then I thought you'd probably tell me off if I didn't put a couple of defensive guys on. So I did have Khalil Mack. And the other one does come from Buffalo, actually, and he turned heads for me in training camp when I went out there, was Stephon Gilmore, the cornerback for the Bills. I think he might move into that. You know, Rex has always done well with shutdown corners in his defense. I think Stephon Gilmore might capture some headlines this year and might move into that sort of top group.
I think there are two factors when you talk about Stephon Gilmore, when you talk about becoming one of the corners that you put in that elite category. He's a guy that 6'1", 190 pounds, long, can get up and play up, play press. But then next to that, he's going to play in a system that features that kind of talent. And thirdly, he's got great pass rushers playing in front of him. Mm. I mean, they go deep into the defensive line with pass rushers. You know, Jerry Hughes is a guy that they re-signed in the offseason. That's a tremendous, tremendous player. Their front four, I think, is as good as anybody's in the National Football League, or potentially as good as anybody's in the National Football League. Kyle Williams is an absolute beast inside. So, you know, I think that the fans, like I say, the fans in the UK are going to have a tremendous opportunity to see some really, really talented and dynamic defensive players playing in a scheme that will allow them to really cut it loose and play. So I'm looking for the Bills to really make a move. It's going to come down to one of those players we talk about, guys, yeah. Ascending players. Tyrod Taylor, fellas, has got all kinds of ability. I mean, all kinds of ability. He can do things with his legs that very few players can, and he's got a big arm. Now, in Greg Roman's system, the last quarterback that was in that system, you know, really blossomed in that system, and you know, we're talking about Kaepernick, so I think that's another guy that's out there on that list of guys that, hey, let's look at him, let's watch him.
Hasn't Tyrod Taylor got a diamond studded mouthpiece as well or something? Did I read that wrong?
You know what? That's the thing right now amongst the players. You know, as our guys go out, you know, they talk to you on game day, and they got all this stuff in their mouth. I'm like, what the heck? But hey, if it helps you play better, I'm all for it.
Exactly. One other name I'm going to give Jeff, and I don't know if he's certainly not, you know, a headline maker. I think we should look out for Virgil Green. He's a young tight end for the Denver Broncos, and the reason I say it is because Gary Kubiak, when he was in Houston, they liked that sort of play action. Now, we don't know how much of that we're going to see with Peyton rolling out and all of that kind of thing. But Houston have always featured the tight end. There's no Julius Thomas in Denver anymore. There is Owen Daniels, of course, who played for Kubiak for years. But I think Virgil Green might be a guy who benefits from playing with Peyton Manning.
I think that's a valid thing. You know, Kubiak, study his history, know where he comes from, when he was in Denver as a coordinator, with Houston as a head coach, Baltimore as a coordinator, everywhere he's gone, what's he had? Great tight ends, and tight ends that caught an awful lot of footballs. So this is a kid that certainly stands to, you know, see the ball an awful lot. I think Emmanuel Sanders is another guy in that offense that will, again, go to the next level. He had a tremendous year last year, a career year last year, and again, he'll become more of a feature guy because Julius Thomas isn't there. And then my other guy in Dallas, I don't sleep on Cole Beasley in the slot, because all of the attention is going to be focused on Dez outside. And Cole has proven that he can be a guy in the slot that I think last year he had, so there was some statistics that the analytics guys in the NFL did about yards after or missed tackles, forcing guys to miss tackles, and he had the highest rate of any receiver in the National Football League. So there's a little guy right there that I think is primed to have one of those breakout 60 catch years and score 7 or 8 touchdowns for the Cowboys.
All right, so Jeff talks about ascending players, and the Jacksonville Jaguars hope they have one of those in quarterback Blake Bortles. I got to speak to him during the offseason. Let's have a little listen to what Blake had to say.
What can you expect from yourself from year one to year two? I mean, what is year two Blake Bortles thinking about year one Blake Bortles?
Right.
You know, what's the difference?
Yeah, I'd probably be saying, wow, that sucked. But, you know, I think I was able to go out and work on a lot of things and get better and really improve. And, you know, I want to do that to be able to be better, you know, to be better for this team and help this team, become successful, you know, kind of on our journey to consistency and getting better. So I think year two, and already right now you can kind of feel, you know, I feel better, I feel more comfortable, more confident. So it's been good.
Just from that, are you quite tough on yourself?
Just
the way you said that then.
Yeah,
but.
I think I would just say I'm definitely my hardest critic.
Yeah, but that's, I guess if you want to drive yourself forward, that's good that you're not just satisfied with, I'm in the NFL and that's me done.
Right, you know, I think being able to, you know, kind of try and be internally motivated and, you know, always wanting more from yourself and wanting better and improvements.
So Blake, what sort of things were you working on in the off season? I read a lot about mechanics and things like that.
Yeah, I tried to kind of shorten my throwing motion and obviously continue to work on footwork and just really making everything consistent, you know, to where it's kind of muscle memory. You can go do all this stuff and do it the right way without thinking about it, I think, is the goal.
Is that the important thing? Because in a game, you've got, I don't know, it could be 2 minutes left and you're trying to get downfield and score. The crowd's cheering their heads off. Someone's trying to take your head off to be able to rely on good habits.
Yeah, I think, you know, to be able to be confident in what you're doing and know that, you know, when you make a decision and go to throw a football, it's gonna come out the way you want it and it's going to go where you want it to go.
Physically, how did you hold up last year? You've sacked a lot.
Felt okay. You know, obviously you get bumps and bruises as part of playing football. But I felt fine and really enjoyed and learned a lot throughout last year.
All right, Jeff, one of the things I didn't actually ask you to do was players and coaches that were under pressure. But as I was making my list of breakout players, I naturally just looked at and thought about some that are under pressure. And I haven't made a list, but I think Jay Cutler is still going to be under fire to some degree in Chicago. And then your old mate Rob Ryan, I think, is probably going to feel a little bit like they need to make a move forward in New Orleans. I thought Joe Philbin would be that way in Miami. You know, I haven't asked you for a list on that, but are there any that immediately come to mind who are going to really feel the pressure and need to step up in 2015?
Well, I think, you know, it's probably 31, and I'll exempt Belichick from it, but I think 31 head coaches in the National Football League feel pressure. And I think the pressure that, if there's any pressure that Belichick feels, is probably self-induced pressure. But that's the nature of the business. That's the position. Like you say, I think that Rob has, this is a big year for them. They have to show improvement on defense. Slid last year, had all kinds of injuries, and every other thing went wrong for him. So I think it's important for him to, you know, be successful. You look around every guy, Mike McCoy in San Diego, I mean, are they ready to ascend now to that next level? Or is it going to be always, well, you're close, you're in the playoffs, but you can't get over the hump? Now, that doesn't mean he's in, you know, pressure to be fired, but I think there's pressure to get it, you know, to the next level. And, you know, like you say, Joe Philbin certainly is under pressure because they've improved the roster. They cleaned up the locker room. They've done everything in Miami the right way. Now it's time for you to perform. Sean Payton. I mean, people have a very, very short memory when it comes to head coaches. And so every year you get away from that Super Bowl, then, you know, you're further and further away from that safety net that success provides you, that brief safety net that success provides you. Jason Garrett, it's always going to be that way in Dallas in that situation. Jeff Fisher in St. Louis. Now, again, have they shown enough improvement, especially if there's a new owner in a move in St. Louis? I think it's just the nature of the business. There's so many guys in it that are under those, you know, tough situations, and every quarterback's under the microscope. But I think none more than Andy Dalton in Cincinnati.
Mm, absolutely. There's 32 head coaches in the NFL, as Jeff mentioned. I got to speak to one of them when I went to San Francisco at the start of training camp. So let's hear from Jim Tomsula, our old friend and buddy from NFL Europe.
You're the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. So what does that mean to you? You know, because you did get into this, like you say, you got into it to be a coach. But here you are, one of the most storied franchises in NFL history, and you're the head coach. What's it mean to you?
Well, it means, I mean, I obviously know where I'm at. I obviously know this organization.
Yeah. But
to me, the whole point of the organization, the people make up the organization. Hmm. There's a lot of fantastic people. So, you know, I'm hired in this position right here, and the point that I make is I understand every morning when I wake up the sense of responsibility. Hmm. Okay? And I understand it's not only the guy I'm looking at, right? I go doing things today. I'm not only going to affect Bob Lang, but I'm going to affect both of his daughters and his wife, okay, who I think are fantastic.
Yep.
Okay? I got coaches here with kids, okay? I go screwing it up. If I don't pay attention to the details and I don't do my job in the right way, I got guys with a junior in high school, and you're going to be moving? Because that's the reality of it.
Yeah.
Okay? That's the responsibility I feel. I got these guys out here busting their tails and going like crazy, okay? There's the responsibility that I feel, okay? Let alone the ownership and the general manager.
Yeah.
They fully knew, I would think, hiring me, that was not going to be the most popular decision in America. I got that.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, I got it. And they did it. Okay? There's a sense of responsibility, a sense of you're getting what I got.
So, Jeff, there's what Jim Tomsula says about what it means to be head coach of the 49ers. And as Jim said, he fully understands that his hiring was not going to be the most popular move in America, but the ownership still did it. And as a coach, you then want to repay that ownership, don't you, if they have that faith in you?
Well, certainly, you know, because that is, you know, you're privileged. If you have any job in pro football, there's only, you know, there's 32 in the NFL and 9 in Canada, so there's 41 of them in the, on the entire planet. So if you have one of those, you're in rarefied air, and that's those are hard to find. They're hard to get. People compete for them all the time. As soon as you get one, somebody's trying to take it from you. That's just the nature of the business. And so to have one at an organization like San Francisco, where you think about all of the great head coaches that have come through there, they've won Super Bowls. And, you know, and certainly Bill Walsh, I mean, golly, one of the greatest of all times. Well, you're now sitting in the same seat that he sat in. And that's got to be really exciting for a guy like Jimmy, who frankly came up the hard way. I mean, he came up the hard way. He was living in his car when he was a college coach at Catawba College, got a chance to coach in NFL Europe, and just worked his tail off as an assistant coach for years in NFL Europe till he finally got his chance. Went to the 49ers and, you know, did the same thing. Just, you know, kept his head down and worked and developed a great group of players. And I think the management at San Francisco saw that, knew they were in a rebuild, knew they needed a guy who could teach, knew they needed a guy who was a foxhole guy, who wasn't going to be pointing fingers at, you know, when things went bad. And certainly he's had maybe the toughest offseason of any of the head coaches in the National Football League. But yet he still recognizes the fact that he's a very privileged man to be the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, and I'm pulling for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we all are. Anyone who's ever met Jimmy would be pulling for him. And you can read more about, Jeff's alluded to some of Jim Tomsula's story there. I've started off a new series on NFLUK.com, which launched today. It's a series of longer form articles going in depth with a subject each week. It's called The Big Interview, and you can see that on NFLUK.com. We kick off this week with Jim Tomsula from my meeting with him during training camp last month. So, Jeff, about this time last year, we had to make Super Bowl lineup predictions. I mean, how are you feeling about that? Do you want to? Do you want to even go there, or should we just give a group of contenders? What are you feeling here? How brave are you feeling?
Well, I think it's really premature, obviously, because there's a lot of football to be played and there's going to be injuries and all kinds of things. All the, you know, there's one thing you're guaranteed in professional football, and only one thing, and that's that you're going to end the season, you're going to face adversity. And you know, you listen to coaches talk, and one of the things we recognize is the fact that typically in a year there are going to be three or four truly adverse situations, whether that's an injury situation, an off the field situation with a player, something in your team, and how you weather those three or four adverse situations really dictates to a great extent about, you know, how much success you're going to have, certainly getting to the playoffs and to the Super Bowl. I still think New England is a place you got to look at. Seattle should be in the mix. I wouldn't be surprised to see Arizona in the mix in out west.
Okay.
You know, the what we used to call the Central Division, the NFC North, you know, has some teams that certainly are talented enough, you know, again. But I really feel like the Cowboys are another team with that offensive line, ability to run the football, still have Tony Romo at quarterback. I think they're a team that will be in the hunt. The Eagles, you know, I liked a lot of the things I saw out of the Eagles in training camp. And then it's going to be who can get healthy and get on a run. That's the important one as you look towards December. Who can get healthy in December and get on a run? Because if you're playing your best football after Thanksgiving, that's when you have a chance to be a Super Bowl team, I think.
All right, Jeff, I'm going to give you three in each conference, and the Super Bowl winner is going to come from these teams. So in the NFC, I've narrowed it down to Green Bay, Dallas, and Seattle. And in the AFC, there's a few man crushes in here, I must admit. I've narrowed it down to Indianapolis, the Denver Broncos, and the Miami Dolphins. I'm officially drinking the Dolphins Kool-Aid, as you would say in America.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, there's more than a few man crushes in there. Oh, come on, man.
And the one thing you're guaranteed in...
You know what, I say it's interesting. It's interesting. I really, really was interested about the Denver, Indy, and Miami picks. Now, and here's why. Does Peyton have enough? Now, I think their defense, if their defense is as good as I think they are, then Peyton doesn't have to do it all. And they may win games differently than you're used to Peyton Manning quarterback teams winning games. Indianapolis, I know where that one comes from. My big question is, are they good enough on defense? Are they going to be able to stop people enough that Andrew doesn't have to win games on his own? Now, he can do that, and he's proven that he can do that. But it's hard to do that, you know, every week. And then Miami, I agree with that one. I really do. Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid too, but you look at that roster and there's a lot of good football players in Miami. And if Tannehill can continue to grow and, like you say, you get on a run a little bit, you know, it could be one of those kind of things. Buffalo, I mean, the big question in Buffalo to me is the quarterback. If the quarterback can not screw it up and make a few plays with his feet, they got a great defense, you got a great running attack, and you got weapons all over the field on offense. So, Marquise Goodwin's an Olympic track sprinter that you just send him out there and tell him to go deep. You got Sammy Watkins, you got Percy Harvin, you got Charles Clay. And you're talking about weapons now.
Yeah. We had a question, actually, Jeff, in the mailbag from Tom Marshall, just on what you mentioned there with the Denver Broncos. He said, who has the bigger impact on the Broncos in 2015, Gary Kubiak or Wade Phillips? See, we don't know how much of Kubiak's offense is going to be running in Denver, or whether it's going to be stuff that makes Peyton Manning comfortable. We 100% know that Wade Phillips is going to be able to dial up some pressure with this defense, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think this is an interesting dynamic because, you know, when John Elway, who's the president, has a, you know, very big hand in what goes on with that Bronco football team. When John was the quarterback in Denver, who was his backup?
Gary
Kubiak, yeah. Right? So they have a relationship that goes years, right? And Foxy never had that with John. And eventually that relationship, as we all know, it really unraveled. And so I think that that's the number one plus for Denver. Now, the number two plus for Denver is Wade has a proven track record as a defensive coordinator, and he has players there. Mm. I mean, they've got some guys now. And so I think they'll play great defense. They'll be in every game. And it's not a situation like it was a couple years ago when Peyton had to, you know, you had to score 30 to win every week. Mm. Well, I think this team is a team that can score 21 and win every week. And so, you know, if they can stay healthy, I think that's a big, big, you know, for every football team in the National Football League, you have to stay healthy. But I certainly think that that combination of talent that they have around Peyton, we talked about Emmanuel Sanders. We talked about some of those good young players. They run the ball better. I think a more balanced approach offensively, and then a really, really nasty defense in Denver gives the Broncos a chance.
Jeff, you said about how the one thing you're guaranteed in football is adversity. The one thing you're guaranteed in football broadcasting is pizza in the studio. It's a fact. Although I'm going to try and moderate my pizza intake this year and not have so many fizzy drinks, because I thought my teeth were going to fall out by the end of last season.
Your commitment to fitness is ongoing. It's never ending.
It won't ever end. No, and it'll never get started either, to be fair. Just before we get on to our week one picks, we should mention, of course, three games at Wembley Stadium this year. We've got that Dolphins-Jets game October the 4th. We've got Buffalo and Jacksonville October the 25th, and Detroit and Kansas City on November the 1st. There are some tickets available. The teams have returned some tickets, and they go on sale this Thursday for all three games. All tickets that have been returned by the teams on sale 10 a.m. on Thursday. So you can get information on that from NFLUK.com, or you can go to Ticketmaster. And while we're on the Wembley theme, then let's round up the final one of our NFL stars to contribute to our season launch podcast on Inside the Huddle. Let's hear from Detroit Lions quarterback Matthew Stafford.
Matthew, how's it feel to be returning to London this year?
We're excited. I'm excited as a quarterback. You know, we're excited as a team. We had an outstanding experience there last year. Obviously a crazy game, a comeback victory that was pretty improbable when you look at the score at halftime. But, you know, not only the game, but just the fans, the experience was great.
We loved the entire game. You only liked the last 30 minutes.
That's right. Absolutely correct.
And what about those comebacks? You had a lot of them last year. Did that say something about the character of this team?
Yeah, we did. You know, and it does. You know, we're a team that never gives up. We understand, you know, what it takes to win, how to finish football games. And in this league, you can have three bad quarters and one great one there in the fourth quarter and give yourself a chance to win. And we did that a couple times last year. It was pretty fun.
So, Jeff, Matthew looking forward to coming back to Wembley Stadium in 2015. He also mentioned there the number of late comebacks that Detroit had last year. And I think this might speak to the character we talked about with this team under Jim Caldwell.
Yeah, and you know what, Neil? That was the most significant change with the Lions that you saw last season. Gone were the, for the most part, gone were the silly penalties. Gone were the taunting things, the late hits, the, you know, the controllable penalty, the, what we call controllable penalties. And in their place became a more disciplined, a more tenacious, a more play the 60-minute game football team, which is, you know, what I think Caldwell's steady hand has brought to Detroit, because Detroit has always had a talented roster. And you've got a young quarterback who, you know, keeps getting better, throws fewer and fewer interceptions, and those are critical factors for them as a football squad. So I think the Caldwell effect has taken, you know, hold in Detroit. And again, I'm anxious to see how they come out of that really tough, you know, NFC North. But while we're on the subject of good news with Wembley and good news for the UK, I thought that Mr. Khan's comment that he wanted to continue to play games in England and views London and Jacksonville as a partnership, I thought that was really, really another positive piece of news for all the NFL fans in the UK.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've had the stuff with the new deal with Tottenham Hotspur, you know, showing a long-term commitment. And now we've got Shahid Khan mentioning up until 2030. I mean, these NFL games aren't going anywhere anytime soon, are they, Jeff?
No, you know what? And I was just thinking, I said, okay, it's 2030. How old will I be in 2030? We could still be broadcasting by that time, I think.
Oh, and then me and you could do the fan rally at Trafalgar Square. They'd kind of, someone would wheel you up from one side, and they'd wheel me up from the other side. We'd have a couple of blankets over our knees to keep us warm, and we'll be up there telling football stories.
There you go, mate. There you go.
Right, Jeff, I've just stopped there. We're going to edit that. We're going to do, so we'll make our picks for week one. You can go into some detail on games, but we won't go into a lot of detail on every game, because otherwise that could be a whole podcast in itself.
You got it.
All right, man.
You got it.
All right. Okay, so let's look ahead then to week one. We're going to make our picks, and you can play along this season and make your picks for the year coming up and see how you do against us, guys. If you go to NFL.com and then go to the Pick'em section, there will be an NFL UK leaderboard on there. So, Jeff, let's get started then. We've got six live games on Sky Sports in week one, and the first of those is on Thursday night. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers at the New England Patriots. Who you got?
I'm going to take New England. I'm going to tell you why. I don't like what I saw in Pittsburgh in preseason. I didn't see Roethlisberger very much. But I do know this, that New England has Tom Brady, they've got a Tom Brady that has, a chip on his shoulder now, and that's a dangerous Tom Brady. So I'm going to take New England.
Yeah, I'm going New England as well. I think when you take Martavis Bryant, who had 8 touchdowns last year, out of the attack, we saw what happened when Pittsburgh lost Le'Veon Bell during the playoffs. You take 2,300 yards out of this attack, it makes a difference. I'm going New England as well. On to Sunday's games then. And this one we don't have on Sky Sports, but Jeff, I think it's one of the more fascinating games of week one. Indianapolis at Buffalo.
Love it. This is really a game that you know, I'm going to tune in very closely to see, you know, Buffalo, Indianapolis, great defense, Rex Ryan, the new look Bills, Shady McCoy, and then, you know, Indianapolis, which we know, you know, Andrew Luck is one of the premier quarterbacks in the league, got weapons all over the place on offense, but can they play enough defense? Tyrod Taylor. There's so many storylines to this game. I'm going to take Buffalo in an upset.
All right. I'm going to think that Indianapolis get enough offense and just enough defense. I don't know if Tyrod Taylor can keep pace, but this is your fascinating chess match. I'm going Indianapolis in this one. So we're different on that one. Let's move on to Green Bay at Chicago. It's the first of our games on Sunday night. I think that the Packers, Jeff, are still the class of this division. I'd actually have the Bears ranked fourth in this division. It's one of the oldest rivalries in the NFL. I'm going to go Green Bay.
I like Green Bay, too. I think they're a better football team, top to bottom. I think the 53-man roster is much better. Chicago's a little depleted right now. Talent-wise, Cutler is always going to be Jay Cutler. And I think the Bears are going to take – it's going to take a little while for the Bears to adjust to Vic Fangio's scheme. You know, Jared Allen, is he going to be able to play truly, you know, be a productive outside linebacker in that 3-4 scheme? I think this is an interesting game, but I'm going to take the Packers.
This next one's hard to pick, Jeff. It's Kansas City at Houston, because these are teams that kind of they're very talented. There's a lot of talent on both these rosters, but they're just sitting on the edge of that playoff picture, looking in for me. They're that next level down in terms of AFC teams. The game's in Houston. This is a tough one to call, so I'm going to let you go first.
Well, the game is in Houston. I think that's a plus. I'm interested in a lot of things in Kansas City, one of which is Eric Fisher's demotion. You're talking about a first-round draft choice being demoted in Kansas City. That's a wake-up call, certainly. I kind of give the edge, you know, in this game to Kansas City because of the play at the quarterback position. I just don't know enough about Houston's quarterbacking right now in terms of, you know, is it going to be reliable enough to win? Certainly Houston has great defense, and J.J. Watt, the best defensive player in the National Football League. But I'm going to go Kansas City here.
All right, I'm going to go the other way. I think that J.J. Watt will be the deciding factor against that offensive line of the Kansas City Chiefs. I think there are question marks for Houston, as you mentioned. Brian Hoyer, Alfred Blue is going to be starting at running back. But I think Houston do it with defense. So I'm going Houston there. Let's move on to Carolina at Jacksonville. I can tell you right now, Jeff, I'm going to pick the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think they're going to be an improved team this year. I think they're going to be fired up at home in week one. And, of course, Carolina did lose Calvin Benjamin at wide receiver during the preseason. I know you can. Your son's going to be gunning for you if you go against Carolina, but who you got?
Well, it's interesting because we had a conversation last night after the game on the ride. I took him back to school, and we were talking about Carolina. I said, what do you think of their 53? And he was really, you know, concerned. I think Carolina will play good defense. Mm-hmm. That'll keep them in a lot of football games. But, you know, you lose Calvin Benjamin, and, you know, Funchess has to become your number one guy. Olsen is going to have to pick up the slack some there. I am going to take Carolina, and I'm going to take it on the Cam Newton factor. I think Cam will make enough plays, and, you know, Kuechly and that defense will keep them in the game. I think it's going to be a low-scoring, tight game, but I think Carolina's going to win.
All right, let's move on to Cleveland at the New York Jets. So Ryan Fitzpatrick gets the nod at quarterback for the Jets. How do you see this one playing out, Jeff?
Like a preseason game.
somebody tweeted me last week and said, really excited about the season. I'm going to watch the Cleveland Browns and the New York Jets. And I thought, you must really love the NFL.
Yeah, this will be some bad football.
I'm going Jets because I think Fitzpatrick will probably just offer a bit more and with home field advantage.
You know what? I think this is, like I said, it's going to be bad football. I think there's going to has the potential to be one of those 13-10 games. But I just think because it's in New York, and I think Fitzpatrick will patch together enough offense for him to win the game. I really like the Jets' defense. So, you know, again, Cleveland's better with Tremont Williams, but I'm going to take the Jets in that one.
All right, let's move on to our next game then. Seattle at St. Louis. Jeff, I'm going to pick the Seahawks to win because I think they're the more talented team. But it is worth noting that Seattle have lost two out of their last three when they've gone to the Edward Jones Dome. And in the last two games, Russell Wilson has been sacked a total of 10 times. So it's never an easy visit for the Seahawks.
No, but I just feel like you, I think, Neil, that the Seahawks are a better football team. Top to bottom, they're a better football team. And, you know, I give Jeff Fisher a lot of credit. He's one of the coaches that seems to find a way to, you know, get after Seattle a little bit. But, you got to go with the more talented team here, even though it's in St. Louis.
All right, the last of the 6 o'clock games on Sunday is the Miami Dolphins at the Washington Redskins. Well, we've already spoken about Miami. Washington have been in a bit of a mess in the offseason. Is there any way the Redskins can... Well, there's always a way, Jeff, any given Sunday and all that. But can the Redskins win this game, or are you going Dolphins?
I'm going Dolphins all the way. I think this one could be a blowout. You know, I just really think that Washington is still got a long, long way to go to be, you know, beat in this category of teams. Like, I consider the Dolphins an ascending team. I think they're a top half of the NFL team. And I see Washington as still that dysfunctional lower half of the NFL talent-wise, and, you know, all the drama that goes around in Washington, I think, holds them back. So I'm going to take Miami.
All right, let's move on to the New Orleans Saints at the Arizona Cardinals. So Carson Palmer back, and we know that the Cardinals were a playoff team even with all that adversity last year. They're at home to kick off the new season. They've upgraded their offensive line. Who do you like in this one, Jeff?
Well, I tell you what, this is emotionally a tough one for me. I think Arizona's going to win the football game. I think Arizona's a better football team. There are two guys that are going to be in particular, I've got my heart on my sleeve for. As one is Rob Ryan, the defensive coordinator in New Orleans. I'd love to see him have a great year. And the other is a kid named Delvin Bro, who we had for 2 years up here in Canada. Mm. Great story. Broke his neck as a high school football player. He'd be a great guy for you to interview at some point, Neil. Broke his neck as a high school football player. Didn't play at LSU. Was on those teams with Landry and all those guys at LSU, but had to stand and watch because the doctor would never clear him. He eventually got clearance, came up, played 2 years up here, and is now going to start as a rookie in the NFL at the corner position for the Saints. So obviously I'm pulling for a guy who, you know, has gone through as much as Delvin has to get a chance to play in the National Football League.
Absolutely. So I remember you mentioning him last year and talking about him being that sort of big physical corner. Detroit and San Diego. Detroit.
You remember that's amazing. Remember, because you and I were walking to do a podcast, and there were some Jacksonville Jaguar people up at the NFL UK office, and we talked to them. Say, hey, I remember telling them, hey guys, you better look at this. You better have a look at this Delvin Bro kid. Well, doggone it, he goes down there, and makes a team. He's going to start at corner this week.
Yeah, it would have been a good fit for Gus Bradley as well. He liked those big corners. Detroit at San Diego.
Yep.
The Chargers have been kind of quiet, Jeff, during a lot of the offseason, barring the sort of ongoing talk of Philip Rivers' contract. I don't know if San Diego are an ascending team. You talk about ascending, descending, or plateaued, as you like to, you know, if you've got those three categories. They may be plateaued or maybe descending in my mind, so I'm going to pick Detroit on the road.
I'm going San Diego on the road, but only because it's on the road.
Right.
Only because it's on the road. And I think that, you know, I agree with you. Who is San Diego? You know, are they that team that's just good enough to get to the playoffs? They'll make some noise. They'll beat some people during the course of the season. Or are they a legitimate contender? This is a test. You got Detroit, a good Detroit offense coming in there. I think it's a big game, certainly for the Lions, because you want to get off on the right foot on the road. But again, because it is a road game, I'm going to give San Diego the nod.
All right, our second game on Sky Sports on Sunday evening is the Baltimore Ravens at the Denver Broncos. And we should remember that this Ravens team were up twice by 14 points in the divisional round of the playoffs at New England. So there's some talent there, Jeff. I just think at home, I think Denver's defense is going to play a role. I think Peyton's going to be fresh because it's early in the season. I'm leaning towards Denver. What about you?
I think so, too. I think that Denver at home, as you said, Peyton will be full strength. It's early in the season. That defense is dynamic. You know, you've got to also understand that Baltimore's going through their third offensive coordinator in 3 seasons. Mark Trestman, the old Chicago, my old boss, the guy that was the head coach in Chicago, now is in there. And Joe Flacco. I don't care how you slice it, when you go through that kind of change, I mean, you can say blue, and I can say blue, and Nick Pike can say blue. Well, it's all blue, but it may be 3 different shades of blue, and it takes time for everybody to get on the same page. So I think Denver will win this one.
All right, let's move on to, again, you just mentioned Andy Dalton being a player who's under pressure in 2015. This is no easy game to start off. Cincinnati at Oakland. And before you say, well, okay, Oakland were not very good last year, we've already talked about Khalil Mack. And I actually think Jack Del Rio is going to have Oakland ready to play in 2015. So it's a tricky road game for Cincinnati in week one.
The Ravens.
There it is.
The Ravens. No, I agree with you. I think Khalil Mack in that defense, I think Jack has brought a kind of renewed joy of the game to Oakland. He's a Northern California kid. He had, you know, his family had Raider season tickets when he was a young kid. He's a guy that's got full of energy and I just really think that the Raiders gradually have improved that talent level. Now, they're not ready to contend yet. They're not ready to be in the playoffs yet. But I think this game at home, all the emotion of the home opener, this can be a thing that puts them over the edge and gets them, you know, they steal a win against a good Cincinnati team.
Is that what you're going for?
No, you know that.
All right. So
you're going black, baby.
You're going Raiders. I am going to say that the Bengals get the road win, although I do think Oakland will be improved. The battle of the first two quarterbacks taken in 2015, Marcus Mariota and the Tennessee Titans, are at Jameis Winston and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Whoa. Right, this is a tough one. Do you know what? Lovie Smith hasn't won a regular season game at home yet. I think he gets it here. I think he gets it against Tennessee. I'm going to give it to Tampa Bay.
I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to say Tennessee. Again, I'm not convinced yet on Tampa Bay. I'm not convinced yet defensively, and I'm not convinced yet offensively. Tennessee is certainly no world beater, but I think Mariota showed in preseason, you know, why he was drafted first in the, you know, why Tennessee took him in the first round, and I think that that it'll be a defensive oriented game, and this one may come down to which young quarterback doesn't make that critical error, doesn't throw the ball into coverage and get it picked and turn the ball over. So, you know, I think it'll be an interesting one to watch, certainly with two of what the NFL hopes will be marquee quarterbacks for years to come.
All right. Our third game on Sky Sports on Sunday night is the Sunday Night Football package, which is new for 2015. It's the New York Giants at the Dallas Cowboys. The Giants were strong finishers in 2014, but it looks like they might be without Victor Cruz with a calf injury on Sunday night. We kind of know what we're getting from the Dallas Cowboys, although there's no DeMarco Murray this year. We never quite know what Giants team's going to show up. I'm going to go Dallas, especially as it's at home, Jeff. What about you?
I like Dallas. I think Dallas is a more talented team. I really am concerned about the G-men and how they're going to be on defense. That defense, you know, if you're a Giants fan, that's got to concern you. The Giants are notoriously slow starters, so I think Dallas at home. And, you know, really, who that running back is, we'll see. But whoever it is, he's going to be playing behind the best offensive line in football.
All right, two more games to go then as we make our picks for week one. And there are two Monday night games to kick off the season, again, both on Sky Sports. Let's start with Philadelphia at Atlanta. They've made a lot of noise during the preseason and during the offseason, actually, the Philadelphia Eagles. Do you think they go and beat the Atlanta Falcons, Jeff?
Yeah, I think they can go down to Atlanta and win that game. Atlanta's, you know, under Quinn, Atlanta's better. They're tougher. They're, you know, you got all the new energy that a new head coach brings. Mm-hmm. But I just think the Eagles, you know, I watched the Eagles in preseason. And really, I was impressed with them. I was impressed with their defense. I was impressed with their offenses. You know, Chip has that thing going. And, you know, they play fast. They're going to... You know, they're hard to match up with because they give you a million personnel groups. They got weapons on the field all the time, and they play at a tempo that's hard to practice. I mean, you can't simulate that in practice. So I'm going to give the Eagles the nod.
Okay, and the last one is a tough one to pick. It's the Minnesota Vikings at the San Francisco 49ers. So we've talked a number of times in the offseason about how we like the direction the Vikings are heading in. It's going to be tough to pick against Jimmy in his first game as a full head coach. So where are you going, Jeff?
Well, it's not hard for me because I'm going to pick who I think is going to win, not who I want to win.
So fair enough.
You got to say the Vikings. And, you know, this is an interesting game to me because we're going to find out real quick, I think, how much of the Vikings is legitimate and how much of it is, you know, preseason hype because they played really good in preseason in the games I watched. I agree with you. I thought Bridgewater had really taken a step. Now, can he carry that into the regular season? Can the Vikings carry it into the regular season on the road in a hard place to play?
See, Jeff, you're a coach who goes with who you think is going to win. I'm just really a glorified fan. I'm going to go with who I want to win. So I'm picking the Niners. I think we'll see as the weeks go on. I think this Niners team is a little bit deeper than people might have thought. I don't think they're going to go 12-4, but I also don't think they're going to go 4-12. I think somewhere kind of in the middle is where this team is going to be, and I do think they'll play hard for Jim Tomsula. So I'm going to give the Niners the win at home there. Jeff, I've got one question from the mailbag because this is a bumper edition of Inside the Huddle to kick off the new season. But one question, additionally to the ones we've already answered, comes from Tony Burke, and it is quite newsy. He says, will Seattle let Cam Chancellor sit the whole season, or will they trade him? Who blinks first? So Pete Carroll's already said he doesn't want to entertain any trade talk. Who blinks first, Jeff? Because normally when players start missing those game checks, it can be the player. Where do you see this one playing out?
Well, I think Pete's handling this about as good as you can handle it, because it's a tightrope that you walk, because you're frustrated because you want the player in. So the tendency is to make comments that the player will perceive as negative, and that just makes the problem worse. So I think the key thing is to handle it, to help Pete handle it. I'm not interested in talking about a trade. We got other things on our plate right now, and not alienate the player. And then I think eventually if you handle it that way, the player will come back to you. Mm. Where it gets to be difficult is when you get a standoff and then people start negotiating in the media and taking shots in the media. Then you got problems. So I think that Chancellor will come back in the fold. I think, obviously, as you say, Neil, you're talking about big money every week that these guys are missing. And, that'll get your attention real fast when you get those six-figure checks coming in every week that they, all of a sudden they're not there.
Jeff, isn't it great? We're well over an hour on this podcast, and we're talking about how games are going to be won, which players to look out for. We're talking football stuff. We're not talking air pressure. We're not talking appeals. It's great to be back, isn't it?
It is. It's fantastic to be back, and the fans in the UK are going to get great coverage on Sky, and you guys in the booth will hold it down until we can chase this Grey Cup championship, hopefully, and get over there and December 1st and join the panel and have at that Telestrator and all the other things that we do. So I'm really, really looking forward to that.
Yeah, and until until Jeff's over for the Sky Sports coverage, you can follow him every week here on the Inside the Huddle podcast. And we thank you for listening this week. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. Enjoy week one. It should be fantastic. 6 live games coming your way. Until we speak to the good folks next week, Jeff, say goodbye.